Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Thanks so much for coming. My name is Bob Keeley, and you're not expecting me to be the moderator, but Lynn Elliott, who's a good friend and colleague of mine, and I were talking last week and realized that maybe she's more gifted to do the things that I was supposed to do and that I could serve as the moderator. So that's what we're going to do this morning. If you're disappointed, I'm sorry. We can negotiate afterwards for a refund or something. We also recognize that there is a lot of wisdom in the room, right? Most of you come from ministries where you have hands-on experience, so we're going to take advantage of that, right? So there's going to be a lot of time for questions and conversation as we go a little bit further down this path this morning. We're excited to spend the next 5 hours with you. It's always fun to freak people out when I say things. So first, let's just go down and describe who we are. I'm Bob Keeley. I'm a professor of education here at Calvin University and of faith formation and discipleship at Calvin Seminary. So John Whitfleet describes that he and I are the two professors of the sidewalk, walking between the two institutions. I've been in ministry for nearly 30 years, mostly working with children, although as a teacher, I taught what I call real school for 20 years before coming to Calvin 23 years ago. And so I've worked with literally every age from kindergarten through graduate school. And so, that's who I am. Terrence.
Good evening, everyone. Good afternoon, everybody. Morning, whatever time it is. My name is Terrence Gadsden. I serve as the campus co-pastor and athletic chaplain at North Park University in Chicago. For 12 years, I served on the pastoral staff at Lawndale Christian Community Church as youth pastor, student pastor. I'm originally from New Jersey, so the accent, you might hear it.
Me too.
Jersey in the house.
Yeah.
But for the last 16, almost 17 years, I've lived in Chicago. My wife's a school teacher, high school teacher, two children. So, youth ministry is something that is dear to me. I'm probably one of the few African-American males you'll probably meet that actually studied youth ministry. You went to undergrad to study youth ministry and actually went in youth ministry and stayed for 12 years at one spot and went to seminary and kind of, you know, lived youth ministry. So not a lot of cats like me that I know that I've met in the urban, particularly in the urban environments that that are youth pastors by heart. So so it's something that I is dear to me. So, but that's a little bit about me.
I am Elizabeth Tamez Mendez, and I direct New Generation 3. And what we do is we create a lot of resources and teach other adults how to relate to youth and also reimagine their context of their either churches or organizations and how to relate to the new realities, especially when it comes to multicultural communities and also areas that need additional support and resources in order for the community to thrive. And my PhD is in leadership, and it's applied to how to develop young people as leaders. So I've been doing that in different ways for the past over 26 years. And so I've worked in higher education, helping young people who are called to ministry. Also began my journey in youth ministry when I was directing the ministry at a local church in Texas with immigrant communities. So that's how my heart was captivated when I was in my past life doing architecture and high-rise projects. So it's been quite an interesting journey, and so I always find it very awesome to be able to come together and speak about these things that are dear to our heart. And I'm so excited to see so many of us here. And I know y'all were puzzled when I said the experts are in the room, because we really wanted to hear from you guys. You are the ones who can guide us as to how can we best serve one another and love each other.
I always hate going after Elizabeth. She's got a long resume. My name is Lynn Barger Elliott, and I am a professor here in the Congregational Ministry Studies Department. We have a ministry leadership minor, And we have multiple emphases in that minor. One is youth ministry. I can never remember all of them, but it's mission, congregational, or community development, music and worship. And so I teach in that department, and then Dr. Keeley and I teach a youth and family ministry course at the seminary. I'm also an associate pastor at a church here in Grand Rapids and an ordained Presbyterian pastor. And I just began what I think is my 35th confirmation class. So I have always loved talking about faith with in that kind of setting, and that's my favorite thing to do. People always ask, what's my favorite class? And I say confirmation class is my favorite class because I appreciate that kind of pivotal point in young people's lives and an opportunity to just sit down frankly and explore faith. I've been an associate pastor for about 25 years, and in my ministry, it's always been very intergenerational, and so I'm with first and second graders. I've always been a part of the youth ministry as part of the congregational ministry, and my work is to bring the generations together. And I was asked maybe last June to pose a couple different conversation topics for the symposium, and this is the one that caught the attention. And it's just struck me over the years that community building and formation within congregations has been shifting, and people are coming with different expectations and different hopes and different desires of how much they will commit to creating community or expecting community. And so I thought that this would be an opportunity to talk about that and get a sense of what shifts we've seen in congregations and how we're responding. And as Bob and I talked, we thought this would be a good reversal of roles. But I thought of all the questions and not necessarily the answers. So I realized last night, this is not a good deal for me.
That's why I switched to you.
That's why he was eager.
Just to clarify, this is not the 35th confirmation class you're taking, but it's the 35th one you're teaching. Right,
right. Good. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I have failed a few things, but yeah, thank you.
Well, anyone who's worked in youth ministry knows that building community is one of the big things that happens in youth groups, and that's that has been impacted by a number of things over our society in the last couple decades. I mean, those of us who are, let's say, over 20, remember times where social media didn't exist, for example. And so the community that we form in our churches is either enhanced by or disrupted by social media. Andrew Zersky, in his really excellent small book, Beyond the Screen, talks about how social media on cell phones allows us to be absent when we are present and present when we are absent. And I found that really helpful, right? So when there are kids in our groups who are on their phones, they are not necessarily just absent. They're also perhaps present elsewhere. And so the definition of community has taken on a whole new experience. Being an old guy, I still use Facebook, which many of my students don't. Have you seen the Dolly Parton challenge, by the way? For those of you who have not seen it, Dolly Parton posted four pictures. And so the first one said LinkedIn, and there she's looking very professional. The second one said Facebook, and there she's got like a Christmas sweater on. The third one said Instagram, and there she's doing something fun. And the fourth one said Tinder, and there she's dressed like a Playboy bunny. And she really sort of caught the zeitgeist of those four different social media platforms, right? And that explains why kids are not on Tinder or on Facebook. So they use these other things, and so that's part of what's going on. Anyway, my point was that since I'm on Facebook, I've been able to keep up with my former students and my former classmates. One of our colleagues here was just traveling in Florida, and he preached at a church, and I ran into him. And he said, "Oh,
somebody, I was down in Florida, and somebody told me to say hi to you. And I said, Dave DeRitter. And he said, yes. Now, what you, so here's the reason. Dave DeRitter always tells people who are preaching down there to say hi to me. I have not seen Dave since I graduated from high school. That was not last year. Okay? So I the only reason I know Dave is there is because of Facebook. I've seen people here who I haven't seen for a long time. There's a good chance I would remember them anyway, but Facebook helps me remember that. And so that has expanded my sense of community. And that's doing the same thing for our kids, and that's had an impact on our on the way we do community in churches. So this morning, we want to explore where this cultural phenomenon is happening and where it's not. It's not universal. It's not every single church where social media is having a huge impact on community. To find out whether it really is as prevalent as we think it is, and to ask how we can either work to combat any damage it does or use it to enhance what we're doing. We also don't want to just talk about social media and about technology, right? We want to talk about how we can build community in our groups as well. So why don't we just go around and talk a little bit about how you build community in your ministry. I think all three of you talked a little bit about your ministry settings, but if you need to enhance that a bit, feel free. So Terrence, why don't you start?
Yeah. So I'll go back a little bit. You know, when I started, when I came in youth ministry, it was because I was a student, a senior in high school, who wanted to kind of translate what God was doing in my life. I would call a redeemed hip hopper, someone who I'm a hip hopper all day. And so when I was kind of leaving high school, the late 90s, there was my community was hip hop community, right? I was part of the hip hop culture and community, and I didn't see that community in church community. It was kind of like, you are a new creature in Christ, and that the old has passed away. And so that caused me to think, like, is that true? Is that tradition? Is that just biblical? And so I realized, no, actually, God created all cultures, and so I could be a redeemed hip hopper. And so my quest was to really translate the gospel in a way that my peers and the generation behind me could understand. So I created a community. I continued that community, that hip hop community, that I was a part of, and just like shared God's truth. I think all of what I realized too is that we all sense want community, you know, some type of community. And so I think one of the pillars in hip hop is just keeping it real, keeping it honest, keeping it 100. And so I think that is something that I've tried to carry throughout my time in youth ministry, is just really being who I am, and being transparent. I knew when I came, my context is urban, and so Chicago's an urban metropolitan city. So my understanding was I was going to be there for a while. Like, I wasn't like, this wasn't like going to be a 2-year thing or 15. This was going to be, I was going to be here for a long time. I didn't know it was going to be 12 years, but I knew I was going to be there for a while. And so a youth pastor before me said, Terrence, if you want to build community, be here for be prepared to stay for the long haul. It's going to take time. It's going to take trust. It's going to take students knowing that you're not going to be leaving in 18 months. And so that was kind of my quest. And so I knew that I was going to stay there for a long time. And actually what I did was I just tried to, like, understand the city. Chicago is a complex city. I was on the west side of the city. And so I said, let me understand this, the city, and also this west side, which is different from the north side and the south side. And in this west side, it's a city of neighborhoods. So in this neighborhood, this North Lawndale neighborhood, I just really tried to study the neighborhood. I realized there were about 185 churches, 46,000 people. And so there was a lot of church stuff going on, but it was a lot of storefront churches. And I started just surveying the community and realizing that students wanted community, people wanted community, but it was so transactional. There were so many people coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. And so there wasn't there wasn't longevity. And so what I just really tried to do is just be there for the long haul, build authentic community. Obviously, building relationships is essential, building that trust, and doing life with students, being there in moments, and that whether it's funerals, whether it's birthday parties, you name it, just being present. And I know that's kind of like the norm in youth ministry. You hear that a lot, but when you do that for 12 years, you build. And I'm not saying that you have to, you know, but I'm saying when you're doing it for consistently a long time, you build community and you build a reputation. Like, okay, you know. So I think, I'm gonna stop right there. There's a lot. My brain is just going 100 miles per hour because what I've seen is even trends in youth ministry. When I came out of college in 03, missions was everything. Missions was like, missions, go make disciples, go make disciples. And now we're in the multicultural, we're still in this kind of multicultural phase, but now we're in the church planting phase, like the church plant phenomena. Everybody just wanted to plant a church. And in my context, I'm like, we have 185 churches. We don't need another church. And I just don't see also the same intensity when it comes to youth ministry with church planting. Like church planting, you can go to seminars. You got like a launch team, like everything, right? I don't see that intensity with youth ministry. Yeah. I see a decline in universities and colleges of the major. We're still having children. Like children are still present, but like the decline, the pay, the attention. But yet we're like, what can we like? So the investment is not there as well. But I'll stop right there. But
before I move on to Elizabeth, let me ask you a quick follow-up. You said you were part of the hip-hop community before you were saved.
And still am. Yep.
What brought that community together? What lessons from the hip-hop community can you bring to the young people in the church?
Yeah, and I think a lot of about I think hip-hop culture that's now global. If we realize it, the church can learn a lot from the hip-hop culture. Hip-hop culture and hip-hop was birthed in the Bronx of New York in the late 70s, some would say early 70s. But it was really kind of birthed out of a struggle and, communities that were disenfranchised and weren't a part of the disco movement back in those times. And so we're going to create our own culture, peace, love, unity, having fun. And so this culture that was created by black and brown people in New York really was kind of like just like we're going to build our own. We don't have enough money to buy instruments, so we're going to use our mom and dad's record players, right? We're going to create our own dance. We're going to create our own art. We don't have enough money to go to the art gallery, so we're going to create our own art, graffiti. So it's a phenomenal culture, and I think now it's obviously it's global, but a lot of people don't know about the culture, which is so fascinating to me. And so in this culture, this unity, this like we are in this together, this collective unit, and it doesn't matter how much money you have, doesn't matter your ethnicity, your gender, like this hip hop culture is multi-generational, it's multi-ethnic. And so and if you think about hip hop culture, it also takes from different music genres, so Latin, jazz, funk. Classical. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful culture. And with every culture, there's beauty and despair. But one of the things in hip hop culture, this authenticness of just, you know what, this is where I'm from. Let me tell my story. Now it's been hijacked by corporations, and it's not necessarily what it was. So I think, but this sense of we're going to create this unity, this community. And we're going to be truthful and honest in who we are. I think that's some of the core elements of hip-hop culture that I was drawn to, that was underground, that was so just, like, creative. And so that drew me to that. But then when I became a Christian, there was like, well, no, you can't be a part of that because it's ungodly. But I'm like, wait, God created all cultures, all people groups. And so, but there was also in hip-hop culture, there was a sense of spirituality, too, that you know, that God is that you know all first given honor to God who's ahead of my, like there was this acknowledgement of God and the Creator, and so that community that I'm still a part of, that I still love, a lot of it has God a God, God redeeming elements in it, community and art and creativity and acceptance. And so I think those things I just try to implement. And I think the language too, like even when I became in youth ministry, I started just using, I would just take the text and just flip it, Pastor T, what is it? I don't understand this. Let me break it down to you. This is what's happening. And I would use everyday lingo or everyday, events to really articulate, what the gospel is saying. Pastor T, I don't really want to get down with hymns. Okay, cool. Let's take a hip hop beat. Let's flip it. Let's flip these hymns and let's make it like hip hop. So I just really tried to use a culture but not just use it to a means to an end, which has been done, but really to really speak to the culture. I mean, if you're not speaking someone's language, and they're not understanding you, that's a problem. So, so I really try to use hip hop culture, and I think there's obviously some things that I don't use in hip hop culture that are not God, redeemable, but that's with every culture too. So, anyway, but. There's so much in hip hop culture that I'm a part of, and I use that in my worship. I feel like my parents were part of the Great Migration, and they're old school. but I felt like I was, I could understand. I felt like bilingual in a sense, where I can understand, the historically black church, but I can understand also, what trap music is and how to, hip hop culture and the vernacular that young people are using. And so I always felt like this translator of culture and bridging the gap. And so I don't know if that answered your question. I'm just kind of.
So it sounds like one of the main things that pulled the hip hop community together was acceptance. You talk about keeping it real. And so not judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you think also translates to youth ministry?
Yeah, yeah. And kind of using everyone's talents. What's your gifts? What's your talents? And bringing all together and incorporating that. And so it's not one, hip-hop is not just, hip-hop is so multifaceted as well. The way he's dressed right here, that could be hip-hop. The way I'm dressed, it's taking like what you value, what your values, and putting it, your input is valuable. Your input, your ideas, bring it to the table. We want to incorporate that. That's something that sometimes the church doesn't do. It's like, this is where we're going to do it.
Yeah.
That's it. And you don't like it? I'm sorry. So I think that's also part of it too. Some of the greatest DJs and MCs don't look like me. they're from other cultures and other countries. And that's the beauty of hip hop. I mean, just of the culture as well. So, I think that's part of what I've tried to implement too. Is like, hey, every voice is invited to the table, and I believe that's biblical too. Like, we're all important. So, but hip hop has those redeeming qualities that I think the church really could use and learn from, and not demonize. So, I think I'll say this too, that unlike rhythm and blues. Or like you think about Aretha Franklin, right? Her father was C.L. Franklin, right? A pastor in the church, walked with Dr. King. So like that, the rhythm and blues has some roots, some gospel roots in the church. Hip hop culture doesn't have roots in the church, so it's often been demonized and like, oh no, that's of the devil. And so, but in reality, it's again, God created the culture. So that's I think one of the things that we see. There's a disconnect because of other genres maybe having roots in the church and hip hop culture doesn't, and so it's been demonized and on the outskirts. So, but if you look around, like every single one of your youth is impacted by hip hop culture, whether they know it or not, from commercials to billboards, like they are part of hip hop culture. But the church is like still kind of behind, and I'm talking about even in music sometimes. But every young person that you work with, they're impacted by hip hop culture, and the church still doesn't really fully understand that yet, which that's I think one of the problems as well.
Okay, thanks. Well, I'm sure we'll come back to this when we do questions from other people later. But Elizabeth, talk a little bit about how you're able to build a community with the folks that you work with.
Let's see. So I'm drawing back from a couple of experiences, and one would be with the church that I was mentioning in East Texas, and then also my experience with college students at the University in San Antonio. Because both of those were a very, very distinct in the sense that the community was built differently. And in both occasions, I have always been like someone who's coming from the outside, right? And then we're trying to understand what's going on there. And I think that's part of what sometimes is harder for those of us who have been in one place for a long time and doing ministry or being involved in certain areas of leadership, that we get caught up into this is what we do, and the kids grow and they move to youth ministry, and the kids, the youth grow and they're young adults, and there's just this cycle of forgetting what's really going on outside, right? And also, I found myself a lot, especially with the church experience, coming from architecture into youth ministry. I was never a teenager myself because of my life experiences. I became a third adult at home when I was 9, and I started college when I was 15. So what's a teenager? It's like, what do they do? And I'm over here in business, doing dealings, working with developers, doing high-rise projects, and now there's these kids who think that it would be really cool if I work with them. I don't know why, right? But it was God's way of putting everything, but I had to take a step back and learn, because I was so much into, so I'm reading all these books, and they tell me I should be doing this, and I should be doing that, and I should be having a program, and I should make sure that, the numbers are there, and it was just this perfect running machine. And I was missing the bigger picture, which was, it doesn't really matter all these other exterior things that are going on, and the programs, but really, do I even know their needs? Because we came from the same country, but we came from completely different universes. I was working with an immigrant community whose parents had arrived in the United States when they were teenagers. And their kids were now being born and growing up in the United States. And their parents were having trouble because they didn't know how to navigate the system. And they had not had an opportunity for education. So if they had a third, fourth grade education, the man, that was already high education because that's what was available to them. And so now they have their kids growing up here, and they're kind of like, what are we supposed to do, right? This is completely foreign, and we're not getting help from anywhere. Surely not the school, not the government. So what are we supposed to do here? And that's where I had to take a step back, right, and see that it was really about me taking the time to build the relationships in the community, not the programs and that. And we hear it all the time, but the reality is that we get caught up on the, this has to get done and this has to happen, right? But I had to go back to remembering that the essence was really about how we were loving and caring for one another, not what kind of groups and activities we were doing. And so in that, I had to learn then, what is their life like? Because it was completely different than mine. And, they were always like, what? You don't like this kind of music? It's like, what's wrong with you? They were more like country music. It was like, no, I grew up with, like, Michael Jackson and Madonna. What are you talking about? They're like, what? You're Mexican. You should. It's like, yeah, but, I'm coming from Mexico City. You're coming from the rural area. My experience was completely different. And so that was a great experience to go back to the core, right? And to go back to what Hebrews 10:24-25 says, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, but encouraging one another. And I had to remember that Galatians 6:2 talks about the law of Christ is that we bear one another's burdens. It's to say, how can I be there to bear their burdens? I was traveling 2.5 hours every weekend to be there with them. I needed to learn, what is their burden? What is going on? What are their challenges? What is happening? How am I going to take the time and be intentional to make the effort? Because I was a young adult. I wanted to be out and do other things, but at the same time, there was this opportunity to say, okay, here are some kids who are saying, hey, would you be with us? Would you hang out with us? Would you teach us some of the things that we haven't had a chance to see or experience? And the parents the same way, right? It's like, would you give us some guidance? And it was really interesting, right? Because these parents with teenagers were asking a 23-year-old, how should I be guiding my kid, right? So it was a very beautiful thing that arose because there was the intentionality and making the time, right? And to sit there and learn and take a step back from, okay, I know what we got to do and how we got to do it, right? So I had to learn big lessons there at that time. And having then not only the intentionality and the time and the effort, but making sure that I identified their needs and knew exactly what was going on. And that took me visiting their schools a lot and their homes and just sitting there and listening, having a lot of time to just kind of be on the side, listening to what they were talking about at church and they were getting together. And then I had to figure out, okay, how can I go to where they are? And that was either physically or with time virtually, right? And so like today we still keep that community even though I'm in Georgia and they're in Texas. And now those middle schoolers are married and they have kids and they're the leaders in the church, right? And they're the ones who are moving things forward. And just that carried me through when I started working at the university in San Antonio and then came into, okay, now we're working with young adults who are first-generation college students and have a wide array of needs because this is very foreign to them and also to their family. And for a lot of them, was the first time they were away from home, and they were not looking forward to that. I know that in the American culture, it's like, yeah, I'm 18, I'm out of here. They were not looking forward to being at home, right? And so it was a big culture shock. But because of their immigration status, their access to higher education was very limited. And so our school would receive students from all over the country who were denied education in their states, but because Texas has an open education, then they were able to come to our school. And so it was once again being able to remember that my job there, even though I was directing student services and there was 10,000 things to do and we had to run the university, the reality was that if I was not spending time with them, getting to know what was making them stressed and why they were not showing up to class and, you know, did they have enough to eat that day? You know, those things, if I was not there for that, it didn't matter if our department was running smoothly and we were meeting all the goals, right? Because at the end of the day, they were the ones that were coming to us and many times not even letting us know. So I had to make sure that I spent a lot of time outside of office hours just being where they were. And so I was living in the campus area where they had the student apartments, right? So I was living there with them. So that was good and bad, right? Because it's like I had to put a sign. It's like, yeah, I know I live here, but you kind of like send me a text and then let me know you're coming, right? Don't just show up and knock at the door. But that, you know, it helped us to then get even the faculty on board that there were such things as if we wanted to communicate and we were sending them 10 emails, that was not, they were not going to see it, right? And the faculty were so frustrated, pulling their hair. Why are they not reading their emails? It's like, they even forgot their email accounts, right? So how can we reach out? And so we started doing things like, oh, well, there can be one person who's in charge of, like, sending a text message, right? Or sending something, like, in Instagram, and then people will pay attention at that point if it's really urgent. So it has been kind of that, but it always goes back for me to the basic definition of what community is, the essence of making sure that we're building relationships in the midst of everything that is going on, and even when the times change, right, and the needs are different. Because I remember building community, writing letters and mailing them out, right? So that's how I kept in community with my friends in Mexico for many years. And now it's all about this technology. And so I think like what Bob was saying, it can make you present or it can make you absent. And so I think regardless of whether the technology is going to be there or not, I'm working with a team of researchers at Emory right now looking into aspects of their artificial intelligence, right? It's like, yeah, it can be a great thing or it can just disconnect you. And because it really goes back to the essence of our heart. If we're really there to care for one another, then we're going to use these tools. If we want to be distracted and disconnected, we're going to find a way to do it. Everybody was up in arms when the radio came about, right? It's yeah. Because now kids were like sitting next to the radio listening to stories and not being outside playing. So it really comes down to us remembering what our primary job is, and that's to encourage one another and pass on the faith, and that's only through spending time together.
So it sounds like in your context, there already was a community there. Your job wasn't so much to build a community, but to figure out the individuals and what was going on in each of the lives of those people.
Yeah, especially at the church in Texas, right? Because they knew each other forever. They had come together as teenagers and then gotten married and they had kids. And even today, that congregation, for the most part, is like the kids, the family. And so yeah, for me, it was that reverse, trying to figure out, okay, how can I then be a learner and a listener, mm-hmm. and an intentional agent to say, what else is there here that I can give? Yeah.
There's a theme here, right, learning what the native language of the mm-hmm. kids that we're working with is. Mm-hmm. So you talked about hip hop and how we have to bring the church to hip hop rather than the other way around, mm-hmm. and the same thing that you were just saying, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And your context is quite different, isn't it, Lynn?
It is. Yes. Now, I've always worked in the suburban, pretty traditional churches where there's a Sunday night youth group and mission trip in the summer, church choir, Sunday school. And I don't know if community ever happened on Sunday night. It's from 6 to 8 o'clock p.m., but there was this assumption that it would, that when they walked into the room, that this is your group, these are your people. And I'm not sure whether that happened or if we're just realizing now that there's a whole lot of other communities, and when kids walk into the room, they're already bringing a community with them. And they're, in many ways, there because they're maybe seeking, maybe because they're required to be there, maybe because they're seeking some kind of experience, but many of their community needs, their sense of belonging, are in their minds met. Whether that's a healthy community and whether that's being fulfilled, and whether I think it could be argued that a face-to-face community is probably something that they're still seeking in a way that maybe they're not quite able to articulate it. And when we say they, we often isolate youth, but really what we're talking about is our culture. I took a picture. I was at a restaurant in Holland last week, and there was, I'm assuming they were father-son, but there was a gentleman who I would say was in his 90s and another gentleman who was probably in his 70s. And they sat there for an hour and a half looking at their phones. And I don't think they ever looked up and said anything to each other, which, you know, who knows what they were doing. I'm not going to judge. But it was fascinating to me that this is not a problem with teenagers. This is a cultural. Mm-hmm. Well, it's easy to isolate one generation, mm-hmm. but it's really a societal issue. I heard a couple different themes from both of you that struck me, that, you know, we're thinking about, or we're understanding the value of longevity in really a Snapchat world. This is the app that most of the kids use most often, and it's kind of, you know, even with Instagram, I've noticed that most of my students and my own children still do stories so that things are still disappearing, and mm-hmm. but we're talking about the value of longevity. So I think mm-hmm. what we're offering is very countercultural mm-hmm. to what they're living and what they're displaying. And one of the things that strikes me about hip hop, and far be it from me to say to define it in any way, but a piece that strikes me as an observer of hip hop is how it's truth telling. It seems to me that it opens up pain, and it opens up stories, it opens up joy and ecstasy, but it's real, and we're trying to do that in an Instagram world where much of it isn't real. It's very mm-hmm. posed, and you know, mm-hmm. like what you said with the. I didn't realize Dolly Parton was the one that yeah. issued that challenge.
Who
but,
knew?
Right. I missed that detail. But you know, I have a senior in high school who will. Don't tell her. Anybody that I said this, but
being
she will probably right. I know
yeah.
she probably
we're
won't
being
listen
recorded.
To this. But she probably has 50 poses that she flips through before she chooses the one that's going to go on Instagram. And I don't think she's alone in that. But that's not truth telling.
mm-hmm. Right.
And one of the communities in my youth ministry that really. If truth be told, I think could exist outside of, does exist outside of our congregational life, is that we have about 15 high schoolers that meet every Tuesday morning at 6:30 for breakfast. Come hell or high water, they are there. Come ice storms, you know, cars that are iced over, and you know they've driven through terrible conditions to get there, and. I suspect that part of the power of that is that the leader has been there for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is that they always do highs and lows, which I think they call it brags and snags, which is not genius. It's not profound. It's not their idea. It's not anything that probably a lot of us aren't already doing. But it's the truth-telling, because we have so few opportunities to just say, I'm really happy about this, or this really sucks, and I'm really upset about this in my life, and I'm not going to take a picture of it, but I'm going to put words on it, I'm going to put it out there, and there's 15, 20 other people that know about that, and there's just so few opportunities in our world to have that truth-telling that is very powerful and freeing and connecting.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I remember from my doctoral studies, my doctorate's in educational psychology, so I got into some different things, and one of my professors was fond of saying something like, all people who have schizophrenia do this, except for those that don't. And that's really helpful when we're talking about actually any group of people, but especially young people, right? Mm-hmm. All young people are like this, except for those that aren't.
Right.
And so for anything we say, there are going to be exceptions. But I was really struck by, and I've noticed it too, my kids who are not teenagers, in fact, one's a youth pastor, he's been at it for 11 years, Lynn talks a good game about longevity. She tried to hire Brian away from his church about 5 years ago.
Three times.
So, they use Instagram stories, and I wonder what's going on there. Is it that they don't want a permanent record of it because so much of their digital footprint is permanent? Is it that they like the idea that they can't go back to it? I mean, so when I wanted to see Star Wars a second time, I had to go to a theater and see it in 1977, right? I did not have the opportunity of streaming it. In fact, streaming involved water when I was a kid. And so it seems like everything's available and everything's permanent, so here's this thing that's going to go away. I wonder if that's part of what's going on with the use of those stories. That they want
capture somebody's attention for a minute and know that that's going to be gone later. It'd be interesting to think about why that's such an important part of the lives of these kids. So how have you seen changes in the last 3 or 5 years? All of us have been at this for a while. Terrence is the kid, I think. But what shifts have you seen in the last 3 and 5 years in the way young people seek community and are willing to participate in your ministry?
Go ahead.
Well, obviously technology has changed a great deal. I came in youth ministry in 2003. And so technology is one thing that's definitely changed and kind of touched on that. Even though the changes with technology, I was thinking about how that community, people still want community. And one of the things that was fascinating to me is that the Kanye church service. Kanye is Kanye. But what fascinated me about it was this flocking to California and then he came to Chicago and all over Houston. And this flocking of multicultural, not just black, not just white, but I mean, you name it, just flocking to this church service, Sunday church service. And so I was asking, I have some students now who are married and older, and they told me like his newest album, the verse of this year, that's all I'm gonna listen to. And but it was fascinating to me that in this world of technology and seeing, you know, this service, you know, that Kanye had and then him actually coming to Chicago and this, I mean, if you were in Chicago, like where the Bears play, Soldier Field, like it was like all blocked off. Like you could not get there because it was so many people. And then he went to Fellowship Baptist Church where Reverend Clay Evans started that church years ago. But this flocking of community, right? So it kind of reminded me that even though we've like technology is kind of been, you know, it's present, it's new, but like they're still longing for this community, right? And I don't have it all figured out. I'm still kind of fascinated. Like I've tried to use technology to build more community. One of the things that I would say too is just kind of some of my thoughts. I'm a thinker of like if you want to change culture, you have to create culture, right? And so like. And also more is taught than caught, and more is caught than taught. So is there community exemplified in your own ministry, in your own life? Do students see that? Which is, I think, is really important. But I don't have it all figured out, but I think the way we communicate, obviously texting is you know, I don't call students anymore. Students don't call me anymore unless it's like really life or death or something like that. But it's usually a text. Or they message me, and that's really difficult because I'm like, is it Facebook message? Are you message? I know you called me, you emailed me. What did you do? But I'm still trying to figure it out myself. But yeah, a lot has changed. But I've often said to myself, be a student of the culture. The youth pastor before me, Pastor Phil Jackson. Not the former coach of the Lakers and girls. But he told me, he said, Terrence, you have to be a student of the culture and learn the culture. And it doesn't have to, you don't have to like certain things about the culture, but study the culture, and know the trends and ways that you could implement, you know, ministry in that. So I don't think that answered your question, but those are some of my thoughts. But yeah, there's so much, and I think there's books now that are starting to come out that look at, you know, obviously smartphones have been out for about 10 years now, and so I think there's books that are starting to formulate about how do we adapt to this new culture, how do we adapt to this new technology. I think there's some great, again, there's great aspects of the technology. You kind of highlight that earlier. But yeah, it's still kind of changing, because I think just when some adults were like, oh, yeah, Facebook. And your students are like, no, we're not on Facebook anymore. Yeah. Even with Instagram. Nope, we're on Snapchat now. And so it's forever changing. So anyway, but those are my thoughts.
Yeah, studying the culture is something that I try to do. It is hard to keep up, right? I mean, if you're here, you're already out of it a little bit. If you're old enough to be here, there's stuff happening that you have no knowledge of. And so I called my son, who's in his 30s, because he's significantly cooler than me. And we talked about the different platforms, and one of the things he said is, all social media is lame if the people you care about aren't on it. And so I thought, that's really interesting, right? That's why none of the kids are on Facebook, and all the parents are. Because, you know, I want to see, you know, what the babies that my students had look like. Okay, that's going to be on Facebook.
Yeah.
15-year-olds don't care. So that's... Yeah, trying to be a student of the culture is a challenge. I teach a course called Contemporary Youth Culture. The irony of that is not lost on me, by the way. But it's a real challenge to try and to try and keep up. And so that's a good place where you can ask your kids, right? So I went to the kids in my church and I said, okay, what are you watching on YouTube? And I knew zero of the things they told me. And so I had to go and look. I was not entertained when I went and looked, but I went and looked, right? And so that's you're right. We've got to be a student of the culture. It's hard.
And I think as we, you know, you study culture a little bit, it sometimes comes back full circle. So like now some of my youth are like the 90s are back in style. I'm like, oh man, wow. So I think as it changes, it comes back though. Mm-hmm. And again, the community. I think that is something that people long for and. And I, again, with that Kanye church service, it gave me hope. Oh, yes, people still will leave, you know, their homes and places to gather. And I'm asking students, why Kanye? And one of the things that they said, too, is just because, like, he's honest about his mental health. He's, like, transparent about his life. Like, and so there's this longing that still exists that students want this transparency. They want relevancy. And I think the church, again, hasn't done that in some ways, and so we don't talk about the faults, we don't talk about the my bads in church, and so this authenticness like that's so you know so needed, so wanted is not seen in the church, and it's seen in other people, and so I think that's one of the things you know people flock to certain leaders or certain people spiritual guidance, and because of Kanye, you know. Because of the things you've said and being outspoken, and so anyway, but there's sent. I think we're never created for isolation, and so community is something that we need, we long for. I think just figuring out ways to create that community is where we need to think about and be a context. You know, study our churches, study our neighborhoods, because what works in my neighborhood may not work in your neighborhood. And I've lived in. You know, the suburbs of New Jersey. My parents are from South Carolina, so I've lived in Island in South Carolina, you know, rural South Carolina, and now in Chicago. But, what works in my neighborhood may not work in your neighborhood. And, again, I understand in the context of your community or city as well. So,
It strikes me that, now part of this is Kanye being Kanye, right? Because he's a whole other trip. So if the church is putting him in a leadership position already, that's a big mistake, because he's not been a Christian long enough, and we do that. I wonder if we do that with our young people too sometimes, right? We hold them up and say, okay, you've got this gift, let's do this. We want to give them the keys. If you've read Growing Young, it's keychain leadership is one of the issues, but we also don't want to put them in a position where they're going to fail too quickly, and I'm afraid that's what we've done with Kanye, but. I don't know Kanye's heart. I don't know Kanye's music either, for that matter. But Elizabeth, what about
what
the last two?
What do you mean you don't know
Kanye? I'm a Beatles guy, okay? I'm sorry.
Well, since we're kind of going along with that, if you notice that phenomenon, it's an issue of we're talking about culture, about knowing what's going on, about trends, about what has changed, right? And so one of the aspects is understanding that if we take a look at what marketing is doing, they're usually the ones who are on step and further, because they're the ones who have to be not with what's going on right now, but what's coming, and then feed it to us and tell us that that's what we want. And then off we go, and we follow that, right? And so with Kanye, you know, he's part of what is has been happening and will continue to happen. The biggest sales will continue to go towards anything celebrities, right? So Beyonce just came out with her new line with Ivy, and you know, it's like, and so that's the whole trend. So that trend will continue to touch every aspect of our society and culture and life. And now it's going into, oh, well, we're always going to be hungry spiritually because we're human, and we're always going to be hungry for relationships, which is a collection of relationships creates a community. And we can't forget that at times, that it has to be relationships. Community is not just coming together. There has to be a relationship. And so that's why it doesn't matter. You have these, you know, mega churches with 20,000 people present, but they don't know each other. But they want to say that's a community. Well, it's a group of people getting together, but they don't have a relationship, right? And so that's part of the trends, that it's easier to just go and be where things are happening, right? And so this is going to continue to spill over. So now with him, it's spilling over. It's like, oh, I know a good place, because he's wonderful at this. Like, he's very good at figuring out, okay, where are the pockets that are empty? What can I do to fill them, right? So if I can create shock factor, I'm going to create shock factor. So let me go to the White House and say whatever I got to say, right? If I want to create shock factor, oh, well, now guess what? I found spirituality, right? So I'm going to go and see what I can do here. And so it's been this trend of wherever the celebrities go, then that's where people go. But it's always been there, but it continues to grow, and they will continue to go further. That's the big market trend right now. And so, you know, that's part of what we're seeing, for example, with Kanye, right? And so if you notice, the majority of the people who go to his events are young adults. And they're people who are like in their 30s, who grew up in church, but haven't been in church ever since then. And they have that longing for spiritual hunger, for being fed. And, oh, well, this is a good merging of the two worlds, right? My hunger for spirituality and what society's telling me that is whatever the celebrities are doing. Perfect marriage. Except how can somebody who, you know, what Bob was saying, has not grown spiritually, will be feeding me spiritually? And so then we translate it into, oh, feeding spiritually is going to a concert, right? With like 30,000 other people. And now I feel good, because I got one of the tickets. My brother was trying to get one of the tickets with Joel Austin in Houston, right? And he's like, they sold out in 11 seconds. I'm like, of course, my dear. You thought that was going to last? Like, and they were free, right? But he was willing to travel, you know, like the 4 hours to get there. But it's just that continues to be that longing, right? And we kind of forget it in the bustle and bustle of like everything that's going on, and we're trying to keep up with the trends and what's the culture doing. And for me, it just keeps coming back to that, right? That it's like, yeah, I should know what's going on, and I should see what the technology is affecting, because that's another aspect too, right? I would like to hear, when we have a chance to interact more, what are you seeing in those trends? But for example, what Bob was mentioning with the stories. Well, the stories, our kids are not choosing to do a story consciously. Maybe some, because they've been told, hey, be cautious with what you're putting out there, and so let's put it there. So it's the sense of, this is what marketing does, this is what technology is designed to do, is to feed into our need for addiction. I want to be addicted to something. Something has to be feeding me constantly. So that's either going to be a spiritual feeding, or it's going to be a distraction feeding. And so the addiction of, they know, they want you plugged into these apps, right? So the addiction is, I got to be checking it constantly, because if somebody puts it in the story, it's going to disappear. I don't want to miss out. It's that fear of missing out, right? And so then I forget about the other things that are going on around me, and I'm addicted to making sure that I don't miss out on what my friends are doing, right? And I may not spend time with my friends, but I want to check what they're doing, right? And so it becomes this contradiction, because I care so much about their life, but I don't spend time, you know, it's just, and are we even really friends, or is it just somebody that is popular in school? That kind of, that feeds to each other, right? And so we have to be aware of these things, because the reality is that our big role as Christian leaders and those who are leading spiritually is that we are countercultural. Yes, we are. And a lot of times we forget that because we get caught up into all these things that are like, we got to be on top of things, we got to be hip, we got to be the latest and greatest, we got to make sure we have the numbers, we got to make sure that the people are coming, so let's make sure we're on the vanguard and we have the latest thing. Yeah, if that's getting us, again, to the core, right? To, yes, we live in this world, but we are not of this world. And there are things in this world that are going to be calling our attention, pulling our heart, and asking us to live this way, go that way, do this way, go. And that's the whole thing that is like, yeah, but what does Christ say? What are my decisions supposed to be? Where am I supposed to put my time? Where is my mind supposed to be, right? Because that's why we have a lot of kids who are having more and more problems with mental health and isolation. And to me, it's like, how can we say we are a community in Christ and we have kids who are devastatedly lonely? No one knows them, and they're committed suicide. What happened to the community from the Bible? You know, that they had everything in common. And then that were giving each other's possessions to make sure that nobody was wanting. How can there be kids in my community that don't have a place to live and have to sleep in a couch? And yet somebody from a church knows them. Well, is acquainted with them because they really don't know them, right? And so those are the things that is that struggle as Christian leaders to make sure that, yes, we're up to what's going on out there, but for the purpose of how do we point them back to what Christ is saying about what our life is and what our spiritual development is and where we should be. And that's when, I hate that this doesn't look very good with the purple, but Search Institute has a lot of good tools for that. And one of the tools that I found that was the four S's that I found, like, you know, sometimes, like, we have to be reminded of the basics, and it's really interesting, right, because there's so many competing things. And so the four S's of how to get to know someone, right? And so, like, where are their sparks? So what brings them joy? Where are these things, you know, where are these kids so passionate about? What is it in their life that, whatever it is, right, that makes them spark with joy? A lot of times we don't know what that is for the kids in our community, and we have to know what it is. And then the other is their strengths. If you take a look at a lot of kids, nobody's really taking a time to sit down and get to know them. It's like, so what are you good at? You know, and some of them are even going to need help figuring that out. And now you know one of the needs that you can be there with them for, right? Or you know that they know very well what their strengths are, and now you can find a way to connect them to opportunities to use their strengths. And that leads to building the community, right? And then three, the struggles, of course. What is it that is getting them worried, depressed, anxious, feeling overwhelmed, and just having that sense that they're out of control? Do we know what that is? And we have to remember the basics of developmental, right, of human beings, and not forget that young people, that's why everything is devastating for them, because they don't have a sense of like long-term anything, right? Like there's a failed relationship that lasted for 2 days, to them like their life is over, right? Because that failed relationship that was there for 2 days and now their life is over and they don't want to continue. And to us who are older, we're like, no, really, honey, it's going to be fine. You're going to meet somebody else. You know, and then, but in their brain, that has not developed biologically yet. They don't have that ability to think that, oh, okay, it was a two-day relationship that defined my whole existence, but in reality, you know, it's not. They don't have that ability. But we don't know if we're not sitting there to hear about the struggles, right? And the fourth one is their supports. Do they really have a support system? Because a lot of our kids, you know, they have to be a tree with strong roots. And that's what's going to hold them with whatever comes in life and whatever's shaking them. But a lot of our kids don't have strong soil, and they're even growing up in toxic soil. And so how can we really be that community in Christ that is there to carry each other's burdens and say, okay, well, maybe you don't have that, But we're here. We're your family in Christ here. And we're going to walk alongside of you in whatever way we can, right? And that's when then technology comes and helps us, because maybe before you had to travel 20 minutes to get to their house to knock on the door to say, hi, how you doing? I came to visit you. And now you can take 15 seconds to say, hey, I'm praying for you before your exam. Mm-hmm. Hey, I remember that you were kind of feeling down. Here's a verse that I can send you, right? And just these things that in reality now it should be easier to build community, because I don't have to go down the road and go see them. I can be present constantly. And that has been a shift that I see within some of our young adults, that it's interesting, right? Because then I'm in their accounts, but I never say anything. Never, ever, right? Because that way they forget I'm there. But I'm watching. I'm watching to learn, right? Because this way I know, oh, see, this one's depressed all the time. Like, this is all they're talking about. So are we making sure that we're surrounding them and that we're watching out? And if we don't hear from them for a while, we got to, like, actually drive there and make sure they're there. And then there's those who are influencing one another by the values that they're posting, right? Like, there's those kids who are, like, with the verses or the positive messages. And then, you know, that helps us to know, oh, this one's good, to make sure that, you know, they're the one who's distributing these messages, and how can we encourage that person to continue to do so. And they influence each other, right? Because it's going to be about what are they seeing in those stories constantly. So if those stories are constantly about junk, then their mind and their hearts are going to be filled about junk, right? And so if it's something that is edifying and is helping them to grow, then it's so that's part of the changes that I've seen throughout the years, that, you know, it's like there's not a change in the basic needs. There's not a change in our heart, but there is a change in the way that we can continue to encourage one another to be faithful and grow in Christ.
It's one of the things in the certainly adult culture over the last year or so is Mr. Rogers, right? There's been a resurgence of appreciating Mr. Rogers, certainly more than when he was actually doing his television program. I wonder if that is because so many of us need to have somebody come around us and say, I'm proud of you. I love you just the way you are. And somebody who's actually present. That's one of the things that people who write about Fred Rogers point out, that when someone would visit him, when a child would visit him, he was so present with that child. Mm-hmm. And that's really tough for us to do when there's so many distractions. Mm-hmm. Your point about using technology to check in on kids or just send messages is really helpful. Mm-hmm. I had a very large class for our January term. And there are a couple kids in there who I knew were struggling. And when you've got 150 kids in an auditorium, you really can't talk to them, right? And some of these, I didn't even want to pray out loud for these kids, because I knew that they didn't necessarily want to share their struggles with a room full of relative strangers. And so I just started trying to send email notes to them a couple times, just checking in on them. And I felt the responsibility, because they only have one professor in January, right? And so I can't think that other people are taking care of them. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to use technology to help me do that. They responded and said that they appreciated it. I hope it was helpful. But that's a good reminder that we can use these means to just check in on kids and let them know we care. Mm-hmm. Lynn, how have you seen changes in the last couple of years?
We have a January semester here at Calvin, and it's an intensive three-hour-a-day course, which Bob does one on the Beatles, and I do one on...
I get paid for it.
Yeah.
So cool.
Auditorium, gets his guitar. I do a class called Generation Z and the Church. And one of the things that we do is watch a documentary called The Dating Project. Has anybody seen that? It's tremendous. There's a professor, I think it's Kelly Cronin, at Boston College, a Catholic university, who started noticing that when she would talk to her students about relationships or connections or getting to know somebody or the process of kind of discerning, do I like this person? Do I want to spend more time with them? Possibly building some kind of more intimate relationship or even dating. They would just look at her with a blank stare, like, what are you talking about? And so she started to realize that dating just doesn't happen very often, and they would say, you know, it's kind of awkward to spend time with people and talk to people. And she said, but it's not awkward to take your clothes off and, you know, hook up with somebody. And they're like, yeah, you make a good point. I hadn't thought about that. But, you know, but there was this sense of, like, the hookup culture is thriving and increasing, but the dating, the steady, kind of the practice relationships was, she started to feel was almost non-existent. So she teaches some courses in, well, she's a philosophy professor there, but she gives campus lectures a couple times a year. And, you know, in the documentary, you see people are just, like, sitting on railings and, you know, it's packed. And she has what she issues as called the Dating Project, in which I've used in my class. So I have a little bit of a reputation of giving this as an assignment, where you have to ask somebody out. You have to plan a date, ask somebody out. It should be 60 to 90 minutes and should cost $10. And you have to go alone, which I thought was interesting, that there's 10 rules for the Dating Project, datingproject.com. And I have had some students just say, I couldn't go alone. I had to bring a friend. So I know this is a temptation. But her, and you'll look it up, and it's a tremendous documentary that tracks some college students, but through 40-year-olds of just that we've lost the practice and the ability to build relationships, to get to know each other, to create friendship circles. And of course not everybody, but this is definitely a trend within our culture. And she uses this word, the term that is so striking to me, that she's re-scripting her students on how to get to know each other, how to sustain a conversation eye to eye, and to you know, and I had one student that they do this and then they write about it. One student said, you know, I was turned down twice. And I realized, it's okay. This is not who I am. This is not my full identity. And other people have reasons. Like somebody said they had a paper or they were going out of town. So it's okay. My identity is still firm. I'm still worthy of asking. And so they asked a third time, and they said, I just felt great that I went up to somebody, and I went, and we had an hour coffee, and I learned about this person, and I learned about myself, and I learned about who I like to be with and what I'm like with other people. But they were, all these students, and my own and hers, had not really had that kind of opportunity. And so it strikes me that that I think many of our youth, it strikes me, are comfortable with having an experience, of Kanye concert, or coming into a large space, having experience with worship, or with a large game or something like that. But they, I'm starting to pay attention to scripting people, giving them the words and the opportunities to do relationships with each other. And I think that that's something that we can't assume. And creating safe spaces and scripts.
It's really fascinating that kids now need permission to form relationships.
And words. And yeah and guidelines. Yeah. Yeah, because they have friends, they have thousands of or hundreds, and you know they'll tell you or followers, whatever. But when she realized that, they said how awkward it would be to go get a cup of coffee, but not to hook up with somebody, she's like, okay, this is the world has changed. And
yes.
I need to talk about this.
Yeah, and I'm sure some of them were like, why are you asking me out? And
right.
Like, this
yeah.
is weird.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm not going with you. I'm busy.
Right. It's a great tool for parenting, and I have not used it with the youth group, but I will sometime. But it's a really, it's a great, it's a tremendous documentary. It came out about a year or so ago.
Great. We want to open this up soon. I will say something that I learned from my son who works with high schoolers, and that is that that even when he was growing up, right, I mean, your self-confidence as a teenager is always really tenuous. You know, even if you do have a day when you feel like you're on top of the world, but by the time you're done with the school day, that's gone. Mm. Because somebody has said something or, I mean, and there's some good educational psychological reasons for that, which we're not going to go into right now. But what has changed over the last decade is now you can actually get a score on how popular you are, right? You post an Instagram photo, and you find out by the number of likes that you get. Brian says that some of his students will actually take a picture, send it to a couple of their friends and say, is this good to post? Mm-hmm. Just to, and it's like all the poses that, your daughter goes through. And yeah. so that notion of being valued for who you are is I think more on trial now than it has ever been, because social media has amplified the insecurities that were present before there was social media, but it's just that much harder now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what questions or comments do you have? We've got 45 minutes that we can play with things. Oh, okay, there's one right in front.
Sorry. I honestly, I've listened to so much of this, and I actually agree. I mean, the description of people, and not just youth, but unable to have real conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a skill that's lost, it's the deep connection. And so I wish I had a bigger sample size. I think there are some studies where people experiment with this, but it's a challenge that I would issue to people who work in youth. So we have 5 children, ages 23 through 13, and they have no social media account. And this doesn't seem to really be brought up as a live option, but they don't. I mean, our senior in college did have Snapchat for about a year, and she finally got rid of it. Some of our kids really pushed back hard. They wanted Facebook in high school, and we just said no. But they've all come around. I mean, they're 5 healthy, flourishing children, dating. They have, you know, I mean, their lives aren't perfect, but they actually, and I say this, it sounds totally silly, they have real lives without any social. And so I'm just saying that to keep that in mind, actually,
as
a possibility, because people are sad and they're grieving and they say, I'm addicted, and yet they feel like there's nothing they can do. Mm-hmm. And we all know you could live without it before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you actually can live without it again. So it's not for everybody. I'm just saying this is actually a live option.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a great example of changing culture, you know, creating a culture, you changed it. I think that's a great example of like
but you do have to fill it. You can't leave them. You can't just say cut off your social media,
right.
And then
nothing.
Leave them,
yeah. Right?
Because then they'll be lonely in a different way.
Right. Right.
And healthy choices, right? The Search Institute has a lot of resources that you can go in there, and download, and they have some guidelines on how to help teenagers, young people, kids, and even adults know how to use technology. And I think that's part of what we forget, that's part of the formation of a person nowadays. Mm-hmm. We have to teach each other how to use it, because like with anything else, right, it can be for good and it can open opportunities. There's a big movement in Africa, South Africa, with the government. They're turning that around, right, because they're having a lot of social issues with 64% of the population in the continent of Africa is under 18 years old, right? And they're having a lot of issues with how do we even help young people overcome issues of poverty and lack of accessibility, right? And yet they all have a cell phone somehow, right? And they're plugged into it. And so what they're doing is they're doing all these apps where it's like, oh, okay, well, there's a stigma against getting counseling and telling people you're struggling. Okay, well, let's create some apps where they're actually getting some counseling and advice, but it's not being called that, and they don't feel like, oh, I'm having to go talk to someone about my problems, right? Or some apps where they're getting information about job openings, because the reality is that they're not going to find that in LinkedIn, right? It's like they need to know what is available. So it's with everything, right? It's about how do we teach each other to create healthy and wise choices, because we have to be realistic. It begins with us, right? And so as adults, I always, you know, those are the basics of leadership. I cannot give what I don't have. And I cannot take someone where I haven't been. And it comes down to checking myself, right? Because I see it over and over again. It's easy to give a toddler a phone or a tablet and just let them be there, right? I spend every week in an airport. I see it constantly. The parents are tuned out into their phone, and the kids are doing the same. And they're like four, right? And I approach them and say, hi, how you doing? What are you looking at? And they look at me like terrified. A person is talking to me like, I don't know what to do, right? And so to me, it's like, that is so sad. But that's, again, part of, as Christians, what are we teaching one another about where our mind and our attention? And if you want to see where culture is going, always go to the Family General store. Always. Mm-hmm. This Christmas, everything that was out there for presents for $5 and $10 was the big earphones and the light to put on your cell phone for the selfie to make sure you look really good, and a lot of contouring makeup. That's what they were selling.
And chargers.
Yeah, and chargers. Yeah. But if you want to know, once it has crossed over from the $300 to the $10, then you know that it's like it's just pervasive everywhere. But at the same time, it's like, well, but then we look at these celebrities who are 40, and what are they doing? The same. They're the ones who came up with the light, right? It's like the Kardashians were the ones who came up with it. You got to have the perfect lighting. And so what are we showing that is better than that, right? And how do we manage these things that are at our disposal? There were a lot of questions on here.
Terrence, you talked about you teaching the generation behind you, really bringing the hip-hop culture in. And Elizabeth, you got into how we need to be countercultural. And I think context comes into play where you are in your cities and everything. But within those two, whether you're bringing the church to the culture or being countercultural and trying to change that, how do you guys partner with your parents? Because I feel like a lot of times what we're talking about is youth, but a lot of times, like you just alluded to it, that the parents are also on their phones. Mm-hmm. So how do you guys partner with the parents? Because ultimately, whether we're the lead pastor or the youth minister, whatever it is, we have to partner with the parents, and we can't fix the kids. We can help, and we can be that guide. But how do you guys partner with your parents that you come in contact with?
Yeah,
that's a great question.
Let me point something out, which I'm very thankful you brought that up, right? Because I forget that I forget about these things, right? Because I've been living like in a different world for a long time, and I think that has precisely been that innovation piece. And the understanding of what Christian community is. And so part of what we try to help other leaders understand is that there's this damaging models of what church looks like, which we have inherited, which got us to this point where we're segregated. We have the adults, we have the kids, we have the youth ministry, right? And so because of our context in the church in Texas, that's precisely what we figure out very quickly. That was not useful to us because precisely we were working with the whole family. I cannot be helping a young person figure out the system and go through school, da, 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 if the parent is not on board. First of all, because the parent has to learn, because ultimately they're the ones who are responsible. And this is part of what I always had to, like, remind certain parents in the church that I don't have 50 kids. I'm here as almost like a sidekick, right, to support your response. You're the one who chose to have a kid. I chose not to have any kids, right? And so I'm just here to be of support to what you are trying to do and where you are trying to lead them. And I bring some of the resources that I can and plug you into that, but ultimately it's up to you to decide how you want to guide them, right? And so what happened in our congregation was that we didn't have like youth ministry or children's ministry. Yes, there were activities that were age appropriate, but the reality it was our community. It was our congregation. And there were like 250 of us, but it was all of us, right? And so that's how then it became where we were all in tune, trying to do the same goal with the same values and not, well, yeah, that's what they're teaching my kid over there, but that's not what the parents are doing. It's like, well, because it wasn't the traditional youth ministry, some are calling it like intergenerational and family ministry. For us, it was just, this is how we live, you know, and especially from the Latino community. Everybody's together, and everyone is overlooking over you, right? Like, I see it all the time. It's like, there's a kid doing something, and nobody says anything. You know, they just kind of let them be, unless their parent comes and tells them. But for us, it's like every adult in the church is a parent, right? And they're going to be there, and they're going to be talking to you, and they're going to be looking out for you. And so it was always that way. So, like, for example, if we were going to do a mission trip, well, it was not the adults going on the mission trip or the youth going on the mission trip. It was our congregation is going on the mission trip, right? And so the 6-year-old had a task to do, as did the 80-year-old, right? And we were all together doing this. So that's how, and that's part of what we always try to teach other leaders about how to reimagine what church life looks like and what spiritual community, and because then we all agree on where we're trying to lead. And then we're not like parents are pulling in one direction and the youth leader is trying to pull in another direction, right? And so part of what has helped others is they're having precisely these meetings where what core values do we want to teach our kids in this church? What are the issues that you're struggling with? You know, talking to the parents and then the parents and the leaders agreeing on what they're going to talk about and where they're going to lead them. And that way they're not getting conflicting messages, right?
That's a great question. I've made many proposals, even in my own university, how we can change youth ministry more to family ministry. And I have tons of ideas, even social work and kind of combining degrees, making it really valuable. But I've found the longer that I was a youth pastor, the more connected, the better the relationship with the parent was. And so I initially would always try to connect, always try to kind of like let the parents know what I was doing, who I was. It was always like, how long he's going to be here. But as time went on, I gained trust. But I've often tried to involve parents and let them know, hey, this is what so-and-so is doing and this is what's going on. And I've always often gave advice of, hey, maybe this is, you know, kind of what's going on at home. And really, there was a point where, like, I became the it was like when I started, oh, that's my child's youth pastor. And at one point, it's like, okay, that's my pastor, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to speak to things that I saw from particular youth to parents. And I'm like, hey, and the trust. So I was able to, you know, speak the truth in love to some, like, things that I was like, hey, this is probably why this is happening. These are some advice. Maybe you try this. And so it is tough, but I think, again, it comes with that longevity. Are you going to be there for the long haul to speak into the whole family? And also guardians, too. In my context, a lot of the parents weren't involved in youth ministry, but guardians, grandmas, aunties, cousins. And so connecting with them. Some of them were similar in age as me, and so there was better connection. Some of it was a little harder because of this, you know, some of the age gaps. But I think once they knew that I had the best interests in mind, oh, I had the keys. Like, whatever I said was pretty much like, hey, can you pick, and it was like, you know, picking, can you pick up so-and-so from school? But it was like, okay, I trust what you say. I trust, you know, because I see you care for our whole family. And you're not just kind of spewing information or whatever. So But I think that's the approach that I think a lot of youth ministry should take. Family ministry, like we have events for the whole family. We're doing something for the whole family. We're kind of communal learning. So anyway, I don't know if that answers your question, but I think
shift in longevity, the mindset,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spirit.
Holy Spirit. Always a good answer.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys can.
Yeah.
I don't want to be cliche, but I mean, yeah, that's a really, really good question, because sometimes I'm like, I don't know, God, help me. You know, like, I've been in. Do I just let it go? Do I say something? And so there's sometimes I felt like I've said something, you know, too quickly, and it just kind of faded away. That's a hard one.
So one of the things I have up here is the five keys to essential for building relationships. And one of those is number two, challenge growth, right? And so I think one of the things that for me has always been like the guiding light, what are the results of them being engaged with that? If it's giving them life, because that's what Jesus came for, to give us life and give us life abundantly, then it's a matter of teaching, okay, how do we navigate this, right? But if it's giving death, then we have to speak to that and let them know that this is leading you away from Christ and leading you in a manner that is detrimental to your life, to the best, to what God has for you. And so that has been, for me, what has been helpful, right? Because especially at first, not being in that generation that was born into technology, I really didn't care much for it because I could tell how it was distracting me. And then I had to learn that it's like, well, there's ways to use it that give life, right? And then there's ways to use it that are going to give death. And so that has been what has been helpful for me. And so if for me to know that that's one of the essentials to challenge them to grow. So if I see that it's being toxic, then we have to speak about it, right? And so, like, for example, one of the things we have to talk about a lot, because that was very popular at that time with when I was at the university, was Tinder, right? And so, coincidentally, one of the young girls met her husband through that, but they kind of, both of them understood, they were like, yeah, like everybody tells us to go to Tinder because they're both very introvert. And so they were having trouble finding mates. And they're like, but this is horrible. Like before, just like you swip left and right and they're just hook up. But they understood that it's like, okay, but this can also be a way to meet someone because they all keep pushing us to that's where we need to be, right? And so they met and they have a healthy relationship and they got married about 3 years ago. And so it's one of those things that, like, we teach them, right? And then to make them aware, because then I have to make them aware. Yeah, all of y'all are telling each other to go on Tinder, but do you know why? And many of them didn't know that. Many didn't know. It's like, oh, this is for hookups. What's a hookup? You know, so I even had to explain that to them because some of them had grown in Christian communities and being Latino, very traditional. So, like, you don't do that, right? And so it was these things that even educating them. And I think that's just part of what our role is, right? Yeah.
I'll say this, too. Okay. What I've used as well, and I'm sorry, I've asked those who are younger than me questions like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, what, you know, that I trust and that I know. Maybe they came under me or maybe I have a relationship with them, but I've asked them, hey, what is this? You know, teach me about this. Like, what do you see? And so they've been the eyes for me where, you know, as I'm 39, so, you know, it's a little harder for me to be, like, I'm part of what's trending now, what's new. So that's one thing I've often lean into is the younger generation that I know and trust, that I walk with the Lord and have, you know, strong, you know, that, you know, I trust and know that, hey, can you speak into this a little bit, help me out a little bit.
I was going to say that a lot of times people assume that age in youth ministry is a liability, but I've actually found it very empowering and I learn about youth culture, but I'm not a dedicated student because I care for the students, and I think they know that that's what I do. But I have the freedom to just say, you know, as an older person, this is where my concern, or this is what concerns me about that, or, you know, and I don't have to be hip because they know I'm not, and they, you know, I don't have to prove
anything
because I'm still a mom and the, you know, the church, and so I can kind of call it and say, you know, it sounds like what you're telling me, you know, that this might be, have a bad, you know, give a bad image for women, or this feels like slightly abusive or whatever, and then they can respond saying, well, no, I don't think it does, or yeah, I could see how you could feel that way, but I feel like I can just say, wow, this is what concerns me about that, in a way that I could not have when I was 25 or 30 or 35 or 40.
We just stop you there. I'm thinking of an analogy from education, though. So you've probably seen the headlines that say taking notes on a computer means you learn things less well than if you take them by hand. Mm-hmm. And so the reaction is, well, then let's not take notes on a computer. But there's more to it than that, right? Because it's clear from education that we need to actually engage with the ideas if we're going to remember it. So there's a thing I do with my classes where I give them a list of tasks to do and to write down things to words. And I say, okay, now which words of those do you remember? And the ones where they actually had to engage with the meaning of the word, there's a significantly higher chance of them remembering that word. And so the problem with taking notes on computers is we tend to try and write down everything the person says because we can. Whereas by hand, we can't do it unless we're a gifted stenographer, right? So the question was not computers or no computers. The question was, how can we use the computers to make sure that we actually engage with what we're hearing, process it, summarize it, and write that down rather than just the same thing. So that strikes me as what's going on here too, right? Oh, Tinder's a terrible thing because it's used for hookups. Okay. Now, I'm not going to go on Tinder for a plethora of reasons. But, but okay, can that be redeemed? And is it the way that we're using, not the tool itself, but the way we're using it? Postman, is that his name? The guy who talked about abusing ourselves to death, maybe?
Yeah.
He said that, you know, certain technologies bend us to using things a certain way, and that's certainly true. But we can resist that, and we can say, you know, here's this technology that we can use to do this thing. So it's even more complex than it might at first appear, but it's certainly the challenge for us as leaders of kids. Yeah.
Just an example is the social media TikTok. To me, it started out, I mean, I've got four teenagers myself, but it seemed to be, you know, some inappropriate stuff on there, but I'm finding that it's actually, you know, people are using it as a platform to express themselves, and, you know, whether they're mourning the death of a loved one or a pet, you know, it's kind of, I don't know if the actual social media entity, whatever, is kind of flipped, you know, our idea of what social media can be,
right.
But maybe it's that way.
Yep.
You're saying that, you know, people are kind of, you know, I don't know, moving it in a different direction than what it was originally intended.
Or remember when Snapchat first came out, there was, you know, all these things, oh no, all your kids are sending inappropriate messages on Snapchat because they go away right away. Well, okay, there was a little bit of that, but the vast majority, and there was data on it, that's really what it was not used for. The issue is, of course, kids will sometimes, without guidance, slide into the things they shouldn't be. So we want to make sure that we're in their lives. Like, you're following them on Facebook, but don't let them know you are. I mean, they know you are, but it's like, I was a debate coach when I used to teach high school, and anybody who's been a coach knows that if you're driving the van, kids will forget you're there. And they say things that they would never say if you're actually turned around and looking at them. So we can be on Facebook that way as well. Yeah.
Lynn, I think you said that they're coming into your community context and their needs are already met, their community needs are met.
Well, they think.
They think that they are.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's actually one of the reasons why I signed up for this. This is that there's been this growth of just community in general. Like my band students have community gatherings where they go out to. And so it used to be youth group was like the only community thing in town. And now every single thing that my kids are involved in are based around some sort of community that they're making. And so I'm drawn to this point of this question is what is distinct about a Christian community?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only thing, we have is Jesus. And so maybe it would be helpful for me to hear where you see your community context different from secular community context and where Jesus is alive and where there's hope. I don't know. But.
And I think that needs to be your focus because I think, you know, 20 years ago you might do all these other things, but you don't, you're right, like the band is already having their meeting with dinner or, like, you know, one of my students said he can't come to youth group anymore because he works at a hot dog shop and they have game night on Sunday night. Other people are doing what you were already doing. So in some ways that just brings us back to the bare essence of who are we and that you belong as a child of God and what does it mean to be a child of God. And I actually think that when they come, they expect you to do that because that's what we say and that's uniquely what we can offer. And so I find it somewhat empowering to just say, okay, this is what we're about. And we're about receiving each other. We're about growing in the life of Christ. We're about being the body of Christ. Yeah. Here, but as we go out too, and I think it's empowering in a sense to go back to the basics.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say one more thing about that. And when you were talking about hip hop culture at first, that's what really struck me because I thought, okay, what pulls them together, right? It's not the band, it's not the hot dog shop, and what pulls us together is grace. Church should be a place where we start with grace, and we say, "We love you because of who you are, not because you have so many likes on Instagram, or because you're on the football team, or the basketball team, or on the debate team, or whatever happens to be the cultural currency there." And then we have the second step of. And we can be better because of Christ living in us. And that's the core. And I think when if church gets that backwards, if the first thing the kids hear is you should be better, which is different than you can be better, then they're gonna say, you know what, I'm gonna go back to my hip hop friends because they're just accepting me for who I am. Mm-hmm. And so that's you know, moralistic therapeutic deism is alive and well in North American Christianity. And we need to combat that because if that's all we have to offer, they may as well just, you know,
go somewhere else.
That's why they're not coming.
I'll say this really quickly. I'm a person of context, just kind of just how I'm wired, how I'm triggered. And so I've often said to my students, this is why we're meeting. So we're meeting. We're going to have fun, but we're also going to get in the Word. And so, like, they know that. It's consistent. It's like, We have a budget to do a lot of the crazy fun stuff anyway, but the consistency, making the consistency normal. So we're gonna eat, we're gonna have fun, but we're also gonna get into the Word. And so when you leave here, you're gonna, Pastor T is gonna give us a word, you know. But it's gonna be for them, and they know that it's coming from love. It's coming from, you know. And I think that they're not gonna get that from, you know, their other groups, you know. So I think that's one thing I've just harped on and been consistent. Even when the mood is like, you know, like we can just maybe leave and not have that. Like, nope, it's coming, but it's in a relevant way, and it's going to be like, okay, I needed to hear that, you know. So I think that has to be the main thing, you know, when you meet. I think so. I don't know who's next. Or
I just have one more thing on that. Noel Snyder and I did class a couple years ago on Generation Z, and it was hashtag what can I do is the title of it. And I think we're such a doing culture right now that you're there because you're received things, but one of the things that you talked about, the hip-hop, that I that caught my imagination is everybody gets a role when you show up, and we everybody can do something, everybody can contribute to this. And I've looked a lot more kind of how can we use everybody in the room to do something and to be more thoughtful ahead of time on intentional and saying, I need you here because we're going to do this.
Instead of just consuming what's
right. Prepared. Yeah. And they tend to, they tend to be interested in that. If you need them for something, they like that. So.
Yeah, Brian.
It's kind of relevant, or it can be a little off topic too, but it's still kind of, you know, that's where I feel like the worship should kick in a way, right? I mean, to connect to Jesus. But I mean, in that sense, you know, I'm always struggling with this one too. I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm youth director, like, but at the same time, youth pastor, right? What I'm trying to say here, like, you know, I'm late 30s, kind of like, you know, a lot of my works feel like, you know, catching up their culture. Mm-hmm. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes like everything. But at the same time, right after the seminary, like learning all about exegetical stuff, like, you know, sermon, like, for 20 hours in the preparation, but I don't need a time though. So, like, here, kind of how to balance those, right? I mean, and at the same time, I'm a person kind of always catching up, and like, you know, I mean, how do you, we talk about create a new culture, even like social media, but then we don't really talk about in seminary, like how to make that culture, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're always talking about like, okay, let's create it, but then how?
Right, right.
And then like, we don't have any method, like, you know, really seminary doesn't talk about it, like, mm-hmm. and I'm trapped, kind of, mm-hmm. I feel like. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, like, I mean, the first question is, how do you kind of balance those two different things, you know, in your like ministry? And second thing is there any good resource that we can always like look up and like, you know, trying to be helped?
And I think you just pointed to a very deep issue, right? That we would not be able to tackle this conversation, but it's the reality of the disconnect between seminary training and everyday ministry, right? Because we hear it constantly, especially with students who come from a different social, economic, and even cultural background, right? It's like, all these things they're teaching me in seminary have nothing to do with what's going on in my community, right? And so I think that's part of what we try to help students in that tension. So there's this part of our academic aspect that has to be, right? And because I'm so, in a sense, so fresh out of school that I had to remind myself, and I was thankful for mentors who pointed that out. It's like, you don't want to be, you know, having this PhD about leadership and youth, but you don't spend any time with youth, right? And so that was, I was so thankful that I heard that early on, because, yeah, I see that tendency, especially in academia and in ministry, that, you know, we have all these people who are teaching about certain things, but yet, so have you, a lot of the, because I work with different seminaries of different denominations, it's like, oh, like your professors don't go to church, but they're teaching you about ministry, right? And so it's just like, oh, that's interesting. But, you know, so it's just these things that we have to understand, right? It's like, okay, so we're in this academic context where we're learning some of the things that at one point somebody thought were important, and they may not be important anymore, but okay, that's what the curriculum requires, and that's what we have to do, right? But then at the same time, not to forget that we have to be constantly connected with the community. And it's hard, because as a student in seminary, you're like struggling with your time and trying to make sure. But you know, the richness of being able to sit down with the young people, whether they're like middle school, high school, or college, or whatever, but even the adults, right, the parents, kind of hearing what are their tensions so that we can accompany them when we're working with the younger generations. But, you know, that's one of the tensions that is going to exist. It's not going to go away, and it's going to be about, you know, until we can reach a reform in seminary training, which we're working hard towards, that becomes more relevant, catching up on a lot of things that are going on outside that have kind of stayed behind. And that's what happens in higher education. You know, it's like regardless of what branch you're doing. But to give yourself the space every so often to be able to sit down and just listen, right? Just listen to the kids. And they'll teach us. They teach us. And that's why I try to emphasize that a lot. It's like, really, if you have a weekend where you can go to some big conference, and I know this is going to sound bad where we are, but you know, big conference and seminar and training about youth ministry, or you can spend the weekend taking a kid to run errands and sit down and have, you know, some ice cream, a lot of the times you're going to get a lot more there, because it becomes, you know, to where, yeah, this is great to hear from others and we share, but there has to be a balance in the learning, right? And a lot of the learning is going to come with spending that time. We can't replace it. We have to spend the time with them.
I know that there are, we want to make sure we turn the corner, though, and hit this last question in our title. What are the implications for worship? So how does this stuff we've been talking about connect with worship? One of the, a number of years ago, John Whitfield put out a top 10 ways technology, or top 10 technologies that have impacted worship, and number one at that time was the wristwatch. And as I thought of that, I thought, wow, that's really something, right? Before we were all playing this time game, mm-hmm. We didn't think, oh, this sermon's going a little bit long. And so what sort of implications does this conversation have about worship?
Well, speaking about technology, so street lamp. How many ever heard of street lights? Anybody heard of street lights?
I've heard of street lights.
Okay. I mean, like, but...
The app.
So okay. Street lights is the world's first audio hip-hop Bible. Two friends of mine,
cool.
Aaron Lopez and Esteban Shed, they're from Chicago. They basically, about 10 years ago, they were on this quest to really, they realized that when they were in youth group, when they were doing Bible study, particularly young people, that their young people just couldn't read. I mean, their reading level was just not there. And so what they would do is, Esteban, he's an MC, what he would do is he would go home and he would put on instrumentals, music with no lyrics, and he would actually just read scripture verses with the instrumental. And he would bring, this is back when CDs were still popular, and so he would bring back the CD, and they would kind of go through the scriptures, and the light bulb was like, you know, we should like do the whole Bible. And so Streetlights kind of started with that. So you can download it. It's a free app, you know, Streetlights Audio Bible. And they have, you know, teaching, and it kind of, there's teachings you can do, instructions. They have the whole New Testament done. They have part of the Old Testament. They're not finished with the Old Testament. And they've done it basically with like little to no funding. And so that's why it's taken them so long. But that's a creative way that I've used and just hearing the word, you know, hearing the word of God to a beat. If you go, let me see, I'm right. This is like Luke 1. And I've used it myself too when I'm getting ready, getting my kids ready.
Chapter 1.
And it's just the word of God, but it's you know, with a little beat behind it. And it's a hip hop Bible. So I think that's a cool way I've used, and I've encouraged students, like, and I, you know, I'm at North Parking Out, so students download it, and they're like, okay, like, they're listening to the Word of God, and it's, like, creative, it's free 99, and so they love it, and so that's one way that you can use technology and bring students to hearing God's Word. So that's one point. But, yeah, download it right now.
Yes.
Streetlights.
Other things about worship.
It's, I think it's a real challenge. You know, we're in a more consumeristic environment. So to talk about community, or to even have any community in worship is a challenge, especially the larger you get or the more performance-oriented you get. You poise yourself for a consumeristic transaction or relationship. And so it's something that we just always have to keep before us. That and again, I think naming the life story, naming the joys, naming the challenges, naming the disappointments is what makes us aware of what's happening in each other's lives. But it's challenging because I don't think, even though it might be a deep-seated need, I don't think people are necessarily have an articulated request for that. And so it's something that I think we have to hold on to, but it's hard.
There's some research that suggests that kids who are involved in leadership, visible leadership in worship, are more likely to stay in the church later on. And so so I think that's it's really incumbent on the adults who are doing leadership to find authentic ways for the kids to be involved. Maybe they're running the sound. Maybe younger kids are serving as acolytes. Maybe they're reading scripture. Maybe they're doing the prayer for illumination. There's lots of places where lay people can be involved. And we need to make sure that we're involving children and teens in that on a consistent basis, to the point where it doesn't seem like it's a special thing anymore, right? Youth Sunday is Youth Sunday implies that the other 51 weeks aren't. And so, I mean, there are some good Youth Sunday things that happen, right? And it's good to maybe give a bunch of kids an opportunity to actually plan a worship service from soup to nuts, and they're not going to do that every week. But if the only time they're up there is on Youth Sunday, then you're doing it wrong. Excellence. So we want to give God our best in worship. And that's where coming to Worship Symposium, it can be a real wild thing, right? Because you come here and you see these worship services. These are led by some of the best people in the world. And then you go back to your church, it's like, oh, wow, this is not nearly as cool as it is here. But when we want to give our best to God, we tend to focus on the word best. I think we need to focus on the word our. And so our means the person in your congregation who maybe has a developmental disability. And when she reads scripture, it's a little bit hard to follow, but she needs to do that anyway. That's important to the whole body, not just to her, but it's important for all of us to hear that. We have third graders bring in the Bible and the light to light the Christ candle at the beginning of every service. And they wear a stole. They don't have a robe or anything, just have a stole. But I especially like it when they have the light-up sneakers because they go up those front steps and it reminds me that they're third graders and they're doing what they do. Now, we don't just sort of, you know, give them a flame and say, go do it. We practice it with them once or a couple times one day. But once they learn how to do it, it's okay. And if they mess up, it's okay because that happens. Our pastor's messed up lots of times. That the important thing is that it's our best. Any Amen. Last minute? We've got 2 minutes. Anything you want to say Amen. Before you leave? Can we thank the panelists, please? Oh.
I'll say this. All of you who are part of youth ministry, it is the greatest responsibility. I think one of the, you know, obviously the eternal impact you have. I know the grind is hard. I remember when I was doing youth ministry, it wasn't paid. It paid a lot. But it was the impact that you all have working with young people. Just continue to grind. Continue to work. Love on students. And so that will last forever. So.
Amen.
So, I'll be here for afterwards if you want to. Ask questions or whatever. I know you had questions too, but I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. You go to the worship piece. That was my question.
Okay.
Have a great day. See you later.